AM Jackson, W266 DR Waukesha, and always streaming on the Civic Media
this
app.
This is CBS News on the Hour, presented by Indeed.com.
I'm Jennifer Kuiper in Chicago. Former President Trump stumps in Alabama with GOP Senator Tommy Tuberville, introducing him as at a dinner in Montgomery and taking aim at recent indictments.
Sometimes even as strong as he is, as much as he puts back, he needs encouragement. They're after him.
President Trump tells supporters,
every one of these many fake charges filed against me by the corrupt Biden DOJ could have been filed 2.5 years ago. They didn't want to do it 2.5 years ago. They wanted to wait, and they did wait. They waited right to the middle of an election.
CBS's Scott McFarlane on how the former president's legal troubles are playing out on the campaign trail.
For Donald Trump, the intersection between his campaigning and his legal battles is a fortuitous thing in a sense, because it really puts distance between him and his Republican challengers.
A pill to treat postpartum depression has been approved by the FDA. CBS's Alexander Tin.
An estimated 15% of women experience what's called postpartum depression, an episode of major depression linked to childbirth or the later stages of pregnancy. Until now, the only FDA-approved option was an IV injection. Now the FDA says it has approved zuranolone as a 2-week-long course of once-daily pills developed by drug makers Sage Therapeutics and Biogen. The drug has one more hurdle to clear before it enters the market, a 90-day scheduling period by the DEA.
The FBI is investigating a cyber attack targeting hospitals and clinics in at least 4 states. CBS's John Dickerson.
Prospect Medical Holdings says it took its computer systems offline after learning it had been breached by hackers. The problem also caused urgent care and elective surgery centers to close and ambulances to be diverted. The systems are not expected to be online until next week.
Mayhem broke out in New York City this afternoon when thousands of young people flooded the streets after a popular social media streamer promoted a giveaway. CBS's Wendy Gillette reports.
Chaos ensued in Union Square in Manhattan when video creator and influencer Kai Cenat promised a video game console giveaway. And the crowd of thousands got out of control. WCBS-TV reporter Alice Gaynor.
They were setting off fireworks. They were climbing up lampposts.
Some also threw chairs and punches. Officers tried to disperse the crowd.
This assembly is unlawful.
Officers made arrests, and there were injuries. Wendy Gillette, CBS News, New York.
Idaho State Police say multiple people are believed to be injured in a school bus crash that has blocked both lanes of Highway 55. It happened some 50 miles north of Boise. This is CBS News.
Hire with minimal effort and max speed with Indeed. Their hiring solution platform helps you attract, interview, and hire candidates efficiently. Visit Indeed.com/credit.
Your home for local news, weather, and sports across the airwaves and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
With news on WAUK The Shaw, I'm Stuart J. Waddles. An old Southside Milwaukee sausage factory could soon be apartments. Hintz Holdings has acquired the former Clements sausage properties on Milwaukee's south side, totaling almost 3 acres. At this point, there are no specific development plans, but the company is working with the city and intends to seek neighborhood input before deciding on potential concepts that could include apartments. The cutoff time for teens and kids to be at the state fair is an hour earlier than it was. State fair officials today made the change to try and stop unruly individuals from creating problems, like what's happened at fairs and festivals in the area already this summer. To get in, anyone under the age of 18 must be with a parent or guardian after 5 p.m. Tonight's main stage acts at the fair are Shaggy and Salt and Peppa. Tomorrow, puppeteer Jeff Dunham takes the stage. With news on WAUK The Shaw, I'm Stuart J. Waddles.
It doesn't hurt, feels good to help. And when you give blood, you provide a life-saving difference for others. The need doesn't take a summer break. So we have a challenge for you, started by Civic Media's Earl Ingram.
Congratulations to all those people and all of you who donate blood.
Take a selfie while giving blood, then post it along with hashtag CivicPints. Give blood and you could get a prize, too. Find challenge details and a donation center near you at civicmedia.us/giveblood. civicmedia.us/giveblood.
All right, folks, let's get started. Parents, thanks for coming. As many of you know, I'm Coach Mather. Tonight I want to talk about the season, of which I only have one expectation, that everybody gets stronger. When I say get stronger, I'm not referring solely to physical strength. Sure, we'll be in the weight room, we'll be running stairs, but we're also going to focus on developing mental toughness and grit, because those are the characteristics that allow us to achieve greatness both on and off the court. So, how do we develop those things? By getting comfortable with a challenge, by cultivating the confidence necessary to overcome adversity in all forms. That's why I coach. That's my purpose. Every member of this team can lean on me, and I'll teach them how they can lean on themselves and each other.
This message presented by the WIAA and the Wisconsin Athletic Directors Association.
The Civic Media Network of radio stations across Wisconsin. We are your hometown radio, refreshed.
Books, mastodons, and website formerly known as Twitter at Green News Report.
Are you tired of think tank approved corporate news and commentary? Are you tired of CEOs telling you what to think, who to hate, and who to vote for? Well, welcome to the Rick Smith Show. We don't take orders from some boardroom, and we don't do focus groups or talking points. We don't work for them, and we never will. I'm Rick Smith, and I work for you. Join us daily at thericksmithshow.com and download the podcast and never miss a minute.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So evidently, Trump has secured the Alabama Republican delegation, the entire Republican Party of Alabama. They're supporting themselves, some Trump. And, you know, here's the thing. Am I surprised by this? No, because they support literally the dumbest guy in the U.S. Senate, Tommy Tuberville. So am I surprised that the Alabama Republican Party is 100% behind the dumbest guy to ever sit in the Oval Office? Not even a little bit. But here to share some thoughts on the dumbest guy in the U.S. Senate and what he's doing to our military, I've asked our good friend Rich Ojeda to come talk with us. Rich is the host of Ojeda Live, a nightly hit on Facebook and YouTube. You can catch that. I think it's at 8 p.m. each night. And he's also the founder and national spokesperson for the Turn Left Pack. You can find their stuff at turnleftpack.org. Rich, thanks for taking time for us.
Anytime, Rick. Always appreciate it.
So Tommy Tuberville, who I affectionately say is the dumbest guy in the U.S. Senate, I got to get your thoughts on what he's doing, holding up all these promotions in the military. In fact, as I understand it, it's the first time in a couple 130, 140 years that the Marine Corps doesn't have a commandant. Any thoughts?
Yeah, absolutely. It's horrible. And think about that. Think about you serving literally about 37 years as a Marine, so, you know, serving your country, and you did everything right. And now it's time where you literally have the ability to pin on general rank, and everything gets basically, you know, comes to a screeching halt because you got somebody in Congress that if he doesn't get his way, then he will punish everybody else. And that's exactly the way Tommy Tuberville is, and it's absolutely unacceptable.
Now, the thing is, you know, again, Republicans have always, you know, whenever they see someone in a uniform, they can't wait to go run over and wrap a flag around them and take pictures. But their policies, yeah, generally, you know, aren't great. But this seems even out of character for Republicans.
But see, what you got to understand is that sadly, people don't pay attention to voting records. Nobody actually goes and points, like, I want to see what my legislator has voted on. You can. It's available. Freedom of Information Act. It's all there, open for anybody in the public. The problem is nobody takes the time to look at it. And, you know, that's where we're at. These people know that they can claim to be supportive of veterans, taking photographs with veterans, and then go straight to the Capitol and vote against every bill that supports veterans financially, that supports veterans dealing with post-traumatic stress. They vote no on everything because deep down, they can't stand the military.
Now, what's interesting to me, Rich, and maybe you'll come along on this journey with me, because I try to find the positive in things. I mean, I look at Donald Trump and I say, you know, the reality is, you know, Trump got us to understand how important offices like attorney general are, how important secretaries of state are. It's gotten us to understand our government a little bit more intimately because it's under such attack. I did not know that military leaders had to be Senate confirmed. I thought the military did their own promotions. I thought they had their own. I didn't know until literally the dumbest guy in the Senate forced the hand to make me understand that, yeah, this is an issue that the Senate has to deal with. And having an idiot like this be able to hold it up is maybe something we shouldn't be doing.
No, absolutely. I mean, it's absolutely sickening. And then again, too, you know, I think about John Kelly, you know, retired Marine, who has basically said that, you know, Donald Trump is the most morally corrupt man that he's ever met. You know, I believe General Mattis basically said that Trump was like a third grader. I mean, you know, it sickens me when I also hear, when I see the video clip of him saying, you know, I know more than the generals. I mean, it's embarrassing, but what's really sad is that there's a significant amount of people in this country right now that will still support him. Yeah. And he's done nothing to elevate the poor. He's done nothing to protect the LGBTQ community. You know, President Biden just gave 7,400 Americans basically wiped away their college debt. You know, I mean, there could not be any more night and day than what we're living in right now.
No, I see my thing with Trump is I can never get past. Now, look, I was never in the military, but I do have, you know, I do honor people who put on the uniform and served our country. But I look at the clip of Trump talking about John McCain. I didn't agree with McCain's policies, but this idea that, well, he was only a war hero because he got captured. And yeah. What was the rest of it? I only like people who don't get captured.
Yeah, I really like people who don't get captured. And then, you know, we also, you know, people need to know that it took Donald Trump over 2 years to go visit the troops for the first time, you know, and let that sink in. You know, you're the commander in chief and you're too scared to go visit the troops until somebody basically said, look, you got to go. You've got to get there. You know, there's a lot more to supporting veterans than just, you know, basically passing bills, giving, you know, them their pay. There's a lot of issues that veterans struggle with, and we need everybody that we can in Congress to be supportive of veterans so that, once again, we can stop this suicide.
Now, here's the thing. Before I wrap up with this idiot Tuberville, this is where the rest of the Republican Party, I believe, is to blame. I know in the Senate you can hold one thing. One senator can hold up all kinds of things, and we've given one senator the power to stop everything. But it's incumbent on the rest of the Republican Party to step forward and say, you know what, hey, cool it. Let's get our disagreements stop at the water's edge, and our military is all over the world. Let's keep this to other fights.
Yeah, you know, at the end of the day, if the Democrats take back power, these are some of the things that we need to remind them to say, hey, it's time to put legislation together that can stop any one person from basically throwing a tantrum and basically stabbing everyone else in the back, especially our men and women in the military. So that's something that can be fixed with legislation, just like ethics for the Supreme Court justice. All of that can be passed through the Supreme Court.
Yeah. Speaking of stabbing and uses for a knife, did you see Ron DeSantis's comment about evidently, according to him, on day one, they're going to start slitting throats of those federal workers, the federal deep state workers? Evidently, he said it on Sunday at a campaign event hosted by former Massachusetts Senator Scott Brown. Any thoughts on DeSantis's rhetoric?
Yeah, you know, DeSantis is the kind of guy that would spew stuff like that, and if ever come down to it, would not have a problem telling somebody to go slit those throats. But I can guarantee you that he would never take it upon himself, because deep down he's nothing but a coward. You know, same thing with Donald Trump. That's who these people are. And they're exposed with that. I mean, you know, to me, him even to say something like that. I mean, this guy was a lieutenant in the military. Well, I guess he got out as a captain. But I mean, you know, you would think that he would know better than that. It's just it's like every day he sticks his foot deeper in his mouth.
He said, you know, they may have some to slit some throats, and it's a lot harder to do that if these are people that you've trained with in the past or that you know.
Well,
so we're going to have somebody out there, you know, be very firm, very strong, but they are going to make sure that we have the best people in the best positions. That sounds familiar.
Yeah, you know, but what's sickening to me is that, you know, he's literally walking on eggshells because he knows that he's hoping deep down. I think he hopes more than anybody that deep down Donald Trump gets, you know, prosecuted. And then they use the 14th Amendment, Section 3, to basically make him ineligible to run for president. Because mark my words, DeSantis will do anything and everything he can to get Donald Trump's base, even if it's looking into the camera and promising to pardon Donald Trump as soon as he wins the presidency, which is a good thing for us because that will convince a lot of other people why they shouldn't be voting Republican.
You listen to The Rick Smith Show with Rich Ojeda, host of Ojeda Live. You can check that out nightly on Facebook and YouTube. Also, he is the founder and national spokesperson for the Turn Left Pack, turnleftpack.org, the website. Got to get your thoughts on the, I don't know that this is even a veiled threat. I think this is an out-and-out threat. Donald Trump on social media said, if you go after me, I'm coming after you. And underneath it is, welcome to the fraud squad, pictures of Joe Biden and all of the DAs and prosecutors that have indicted him thus far. Do you take that as a threat?
Absolutely. And make no mistake about it. You know, Donald Trump doesn't have the courage to do anything, but he has a following that are absolutely dumb enough to actually follow through with these things. And once again, you know, he was read the Riot Act by Judge Chutkin, I think that was her name. But he was read what he could not do. And she flat out said, you know, you're not going to leave here and intimidate and use social media. And that's what he's done. So, you know, one day after, he's already stuck his foot in his mouth. And the truth is they need to go ahead and put him in jail. Let him stay in jail until trial. I mean, take him off social media.
Because they would do that to you or me in a heartbeat.
In a heartbeat. Well, I mean, that's just the way that it is. I mean, but see, Donald Trump, I don't know if you heard this, but Donald Trump is actually requesting that the trial be moved to West Virginia.
I would request that, too, because, you know, he believes he's got a better shot in West
it's
Virginia.
The state for Donald Trump. Yeah, but I mean, you know, just the thought of him coming up with that and then doing it in a way that was like, I don't know, let's see, just send it someplace other than D.C. I don't care where you send it. I don't know, West Virginia, you know, the state that voted more for him than any other state. Yeah, it's an embarrassment. But yeah, that right there to me is an absolute direct threat, and Judge Chutkin needs to deal with it.
But are we surprised? I mean, the reality is, and look, I've actually given Trump credit for this. He has set the narrative. He has set the way, the tone of how all this stuff goes. He announces the indictments. You know, he's framing it in a way that he's the victim. He's the one being persecuted, and he's doing it all because, you know, for the supporters. I mean, yep. He is really, you know, and thanks to our media, they're culpable in this. He's really set the tone of the media.
He's already said also, you know, they're not just indicting me, they're indicting you. I mean, goodness gracious, the sound bites that come from these morons is sickening.
But the thing is it keeps getting regurgitated. I mean, it's out there.
Yeah.
And the more he does it, the more the base sucks it up, because this is what they want. They want this kind of a leader. They want somebody who they believe is fighting the fight for them. That's the whole reason he's playing this narrative.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, and he knows that this is all he's got. At the end of the day, he knows the evidence against him is damning. You know, that's one thing about Jack Smith that, you know, and I was listening to Michael Popok today, and I believe it was him, and he was talking about how one of the lawyers who read the indictment said that, you know, Jack Smith has literally already prepared a response to literally anything that they could ask. I mean, hit it out of the park, home run, no matter what they do. He is meticulous, and he's got the evidence. And then again, too, every time Donald Trump walks and gets in front of a microphone, he tells one himself. I mean, this guy is absolutely his worst enemy, and he's not a business. You know, you see these people, we like Donald Trump because he's a good businessman. He went bankrupt six times, you know, absolute garbage.
Yeah, and he's using the flock's money to pay his legal fees. No, it's quite remarkable.
Yep, $40 million worth.
Well, you know, there'll probably be 40 more because he is going to again be able to do what he's done in the past, and that's get people all on his side, all riled up, because you've got the right wing media out there that keeps hammering this. And this is one of those things, Rich, that, you know, I would never do for anyone. If Biden was wrong, if all this Hunter Biden stuff were what I hear is right, and there's a direct quid pro quo, and Joe said to Burisma, "You hire my son, and I'll get you this," then yeah, he's got to go. There is none of that. They've been able to show none of that. But if there were, I mean, if it was there, if the perfect phone call were there, I would say no, he's got to go. I don't see the other side being capable of doing that.
No, they're not. And I love the fact that President Biden has already come out and said that no matter what, he will not use pardon power, because if his son is proven guilty, then he needs to be, you know, he needs to pay for his crimes.
Yeah.
So, there's such a double standard between one side and the other side. And I know both sides have flaws, but, you know, I tell you, you know, I'll put the Democrats up against the Republicans in terms of morals, values, all, anything they got.
No, I mean, for me, Rich, and this is where I want to end this, because, you know, for me, the whole Hunter Biden thing, after hearing Devin Archer's testimony and after, you know, reading through some of it, my admiration for Joe Biden has gone up. The fact that, you know, as vice president, in his roles afterwards, you know, he's calling the kid every day. He's calling Hunter Biden every day to check up on him, because he's a father, yeah, who's grieving and cares about his son who's got some, yep, problems. That to me just that endears me to Jelly Bucket Joe even more.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely spot on.
But I hope folks will check out the podcast. Make sure you get that Ojeda Live, Facebook Live, YouTube Live. Also, turnleftpack.org, the website. Rich, appreciate the time, man.
Thanks, Rick. I appreciate you.
Our good friend Rich Ojeda. Make sure you check out that stuff. Going to take a quick break. Back with your thoughts. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors. The American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
The phone lines are open. Give Rick a call at 1-866-416-RICK. That's 1-866-416-7425.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors. The American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
Welcome back to The Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So Bailey in New Mexico sent me an email. He said, "Rick, do you know who Charlie Kirk is?" Yeah, I do, unfortunately. I'm not a huge fan, but he says, "Have you listened to his podcast?" Answer, no, I have not. I have seen some of his clips on social media, and that's only because I couldn't swipe past fast enough. But Bailey writes, he is advocating for the execution of Joe Biden. How can this stuff be broadcast and no one held accountable? And then he goes into a bunch about the fairness doctrine and the need to revive that. And look, you know, that's the fantasy, is to return to the days of the fairness doctrine, when you could have equal thoughts and you could have honest debates and all of that. Understand, the genie's out of the bottle, the cat's out of the bag, whichever phrase you want to use, you're not putting it back in there. What has to happen is you know, the left has to do more to encourage, more to fund infrastructure for media, and more sharing and more speech. There has to be. As a liberal, I'm someone who believes in more speech. And if idiots say stupid things, we talk them down. But here's the thing. And this is the failure of Democrats. This is the failure of the left. This is the failure of the labor movement. This is the failure of sane, rational people. And I've been screaming about this for, about two decades now. The idea that you have to have an equal voice, that there has to be another message. I started this program 18 years ago, coming up Labor Day, as a small bit of balance to what you hear on the radio waves. A small bit of a different thought. A working class perspective that isn't told. What the right-wing media does masterfully, everything's focus group tested, think tank approved, for maximum outrage. So when someone like this guy goes on, we need to execute Joe Biden, they understand what that's going to do. It's going to elicit a response from the audience to tune in. This is what right-wing MAGA media has done. And these people have been programming this stuff for years. This is nothing new. This is repeated conditioning. And it's been allowed to go on unchecked for decades now. So, welcome to this kind of hateful, vile rhetoric. And the sad reality is a lot of people allow it into their lives. A lot of people are consumed by it. A lot of people have grown up on it and now don't think there's anything else, that there's any other views. So am I surprised that someone said, we're going to go get executed, and if we can't do it, somebody's going to. No, I'm not surprised. Sadly, this is who that audience is. And this is what is being broadcast into millions of homes across this country. And sadly, into the homes of people that we know and we love. And you can't talk to them. You can't have a rational discussion because, they've been sold on this idea that, they know it all. And because, Rush said so, or, whoever the Rush replacement is here recently. But what they understand, and this is the important part of this, is the right understands, they understand outrage. They understand getting people all lathered up and all angry and all ticked off and ready to go to war. They understand how to scare the living you-know-what out of people. And they know how to get a catchphrase going. One of my favorite things is the whole Let's Go Brandon thing. I know people who, they'll be thrilled to go into an arena or a mall or something just so they can scream, "Let's go, Brandon!" And no one knows what they mean, and everyone knows it. It means F Joe Biden. So I found it interesting, and someone sent me this clip, but I gotta play the clip because it's kind of funny. Joe Biden recently did a commercial, did a little ad, drinking coffee, which got the right wing just absolutely out of their minds. So here's Fox News doing the, I love this. Here's Fox News doing their thing.
If I'm a Democratic Party member, I'm embarrassed because he's actually doing his Democratic Party a disservice. Dark Brandon is not funny. I mean, that's actually a really dark joke at the expense of the American public. Like, I don't think it's funny. And Brandon is not a compliment. So that's all he's got to go on is to take the worst insult that he's adopted through his presidency and make something of it.
Yes. This is the great part of this. This is why the Dark Brandon thing is so funny. He has taken the Let's Go Brandon thing and turned it around. And it's made the Fox News people crazy. Hyperplectic. I mean, it's hysterical that they think he should just internalize the Let's Go Brandon thing and just that's what we do to him. The Dark Brandon thing is fabulous. The fact that he just drank a cup of coffee with the image of him on it with the bright eyes, and he sets the coffee down. He goes, "I like my coffee dark," which is great. considering the fact that, you know, whenever he does something that puts the Republicans in their place, social media goes crazy and calls him Dark Brandon. I think it's brilliant. I think it's about time that we have a president with a sense of humor. And good on Joe, man. Good on him. Now, again, I do find it interesting that these talking heads, who have nothing better to do, by the way, than, I can't believe he would do this. It's such an outrage. We should all be outraged. We should be outraged. And I think they think by saying the word outraged a lot that maybe the viewers, I don't know, maybe the viewers are going to be angry. Angry that no one cares when they say, let's go, Brandon. Nobody cares. It's kind of like your sign. Go ahead, stupid. Say dumb stuff. Show us that IQ. Way to go, Dark Brandon. I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in 2. On this day in labor history, the year was 1942. That was the day that the United States and Mexico signed the Mexican Farm Labor Agreement. It became known as the Bracero Program. The word bracero can be translated into one who works with his arms and refers to farm workers. This program allowed Mexican agricultural workers to enter the United States on a temporary basis. There was a shortage of labor due to the U.S. entry into World War II. Large American farm owners were clamoring for cheap labor. By 1945, more than 100,000 Mexican migrant workers were employed through bracero contracts, mostly in western and southern states. Most were farm workers, but others labored on the railroads. The program continued until 1964. More than 4.5 million individual labor contracts with Mexican workers were awarded as part of this program. Many of these workers faced exploitation and discrimination. For example, some of the workers had to subject themselves to fumigation by DDT before they could enter the United States to work. These Mexican workers were often paid less than white workers performing the same labor, and they were often cheated out of their wages. The workers were required to work long hours under often grueling conditions. Despite this exploitation, the Bracero program did have some minimal protections for pay and working conditions for those under contract. Farm owners unwilling to meet even these low standards began to hire undocumented labor to skirt the rules. Labor organizer Ernesto Galarraza wrote a book about the program called Stranger in Our Fields. In it, he recounts a worker explaining, quote, in this camp, we have no names. We are called only by numbers. Like what you hear? Check out more at laborhistoryin2.com.
Senator Tom Cotton, a far-out right-winger, is to good public policy what a boll weevil is to a good cotton crop. Totally destructive. But he is politically candid. Rather than disguising his racial bigotry, for example, Tom flaunts it, as he did last month in an open letter to the retail giant Target. While the senator is usually a devoted corporate-hugging Republican, he lashed out at Target for business policies that he furiously condemns as racially discriminatory against white people. What popped Tom's cork was the chain's pledge to increase the number of black people it hires by 20%. Holy Dixieland, Whale Cotton, hiring more of them means fewer jobs for us white people. He insisted that Caucasians had the right to take any and all of Target's jobs. Interestingly, Target's gesture to racial equality was made 3 years ago, with no peep of protest from the now infuriated Cotton. What changed? The GOP's dog-whistling tune, the new politically correct line of anti-black racists, even parroted by today's Republican Supreme Court, is that all efforts to provide racial fairness and balance are, get this, illegal racism against the white majority. So Cotton is just scurrying aboard his party's latest anti-black bandwagon, proclaiming that whites must be protected from racial progress. Not only are Tom and his ilk threatening teachers, librarians, and local governments for promoting equality, but also brand-name corporations that they claim to be woke. That is, not solely focused on profits, but also promoting a little attention to America's need for social justice. This is Jim Hightower saying, ironically, Tom's clique piously claims to be devout Christians. But guess who was supremely woke? Jesus! Tom Cotton needs to review the Sermon on the Mount, for Jesus declared that those who hunger and thirst for justice are blessed.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So, Republican presidential candidate Vivek Ramaswamy, evidently, according to Politico, would not say if he would have certified the election in 2020. Wouldn't say that he would do as Vice President Mike Pence did, completely sidestepped the question, evidently did it repeatedly. And it's one of those things where I don't know if it's that he wouldn't have certified the election, or if it's one of those things, and I think it's more this. He thinks he's smarter than everyone else, and he thinks that he would have handled it completely differently, because he said, I would have never let it get to that point. I would have never put myself or been part of an administration if I was in a serious position of leadership to ever have allowed us to have gotten to that doorstep. Why not just say, I would have certified the election, I would have stopped it. Yeah, but no. Got to do the dance. Anyway, here to share some thoughts on, you know, maybe he wouldn't have certified. I don't know. But here to share some thoughts on the big stories of the day, our good friend, former Ohio Congressman and political analyst, Bob Ney. Bob, thanks for taking time for us.
Thank you, Rick.
So what do you make of this? Is this a big deal? Is it? Why not just say, no, I would have certified the election? Why create something that you don't need to create?
Well, you know, a couple of questions here. They're asking him if he would have done what Mike Pence did, right? I mean, what Mike Pence refused to do.
Right.
So I guess the point, if I was him, that I would have made is, I'm not running for vice president.
Oh, yeah, there you go.
That's one. Number two, then as a reporter, I would come back and say, well, wonder if the president asked you. And then I would say, I would follow the law. And everybody knows what the law is. Now, I have a picture I will never give you, by the way. I may give it to Carol, but I'm not going to give it to you.
Ah.
And it's Cheney standing behind me at the dais of the House. Dick Cheney, all right?
Okay.
Good picture. We were both younger. And he's standing up there. It's Electoral College. Ohio was called, and they let me be the one to stand at the dais to accept Ohio because it put Bush over, you know, and I'm from Ohio. And it's publicity. And the late Stephanie Tubbs Jones stood up and, you know, protested the election, which, you know, we then recessed. We had allowed a certain amount of agreeable debate time, et cetera. And then, of course, Bush was certified with, you know, some no votes. And nobody tore the Capitol apart.
Right.
I want to point that little thing out there.
Right. Nobody tore the Capitol apart.
Nobody tore the Capitol apart. Now, at no point in time did I ever think that Cheney standing behind me could do anything except what he was doing, nor could I, in accepting the Electoral College of whatever they called it to me that day, which was the Ohio votes for Bush, nor could I have done anything or said to Cheney, hey, let's rock and roll, you know, and change this. You can't do it. And so at least Ramaswamy should have said, there's a current law. The law is very clear. There is no process where the vice president can all of a sudden, you know, reject these things.
Yeah.
So why he didn't answer that, you know, is beyond me. Of course, he said he would pardon Trump. So he's going the full, you know, the full Monty on all this.
Which is weird to me. I mean, it really is weird to me. I mean, everything around Trump is weird to me. I got to be quite frank. You know,
well,
I look at Ted Cruz, you know, claiming that, you know, he claimed Ted Cruz's father, I guess, killed, who knows, something with Lee Harvey Oswald, Kennedy, his wife's ugly. I mean,
right.
All of the things that Trump has said and done to people, it's amazing to me. They want to hang Mike Pence, for Christ's sake.
I mean, also the fact, and anybody that ignores this, and I think it was best said, you know, Obama during a private dinner had said, basically, I'm going to paraphrase it, don't take Trump for granted. You know, Obama has said this to Biden in
right.
a private dinner. And I think that's, you know, good advice for anybody. And on the other side of it, if Trump people think this is a walk away, well, it's good advice for them to understand it's not. So, you know, it's tight. But I will say this is mystifying about this and the indictments. it just, I don't know, it gets me, is the fact that, you know, that after the polling, it's close. Now, I haven't seen anything on the third indictment. Of course, there's going to be, I think, a fourth one, too. Now, if there's a conviction in one of them, there'll be an appeal process, because you know how, Rick, they do that before the trial really begins. They set up their appeals,
right?
You know, the questions they ask. We want this thrown out and things like that. Now, I do believe if there's a conviction, then Trump's numbers will go down amongst the Republicans. Maybe not to the point where it can stop him, because there's too many people in the race anyway. So I think Vivek Ramaswamy is just, he's up trying to be a placeholder and not, quote, rock the boat. And Trump doesn't run, which is still my guess, and don't rock the boat, and then he jumps in there. I mean, this is where I think his mind is going of not answering this particular question.
Well, I think that's where all the, other than DeSantis, I think that's where everyone's mind is at. Or mm-hmm. maybe even Christie. But I think, you know, Tim Scott, I think Youngkin, you know, tooling around with the possibility. Mm-hmm. Nikki Haley, I think all of them are waiting for Trump's demise so that they can jump into that spot, no?
I think they haven't maybe said it, but I've been saying this, you know, for a year and a half, that I don't, before he got indicted.
Yeah.
I said,
no,
I
you
didn't
have.
Think, you know, and I'm still holding to that, only because, you know, he'll find some reason eventually if it looks like he's not going to make it. Although the problem with this, he's toxic with independents, and I understand that. However, if this gets so ugly, because this is going to be about basically three issues and or four, who Trump has as a running mate, Trump, is Trump going to be indicted or not, what's Trump's latest legal woe, is the president too old to be president, and what about Kamala Harris? I mean, forget, you know, deficits and debts and
no, or any policy.
Education and labor and manufacturing, just forget all that, because that's the two issues. And that makes independence not only toxic for Trump, but it also may make independents upset, disgusted, and they stay away.
That's no, I mean, look, I've said before, if Trump's the nominee, he's not growing any new voters.
Exactly.
He has the voters he has. He can only lose some. If I'm a betting man, and I wouldn't, right. I'm not going to bet an awful lot, but I would bet if it does come down to being Joe Biden and Donald Trump, I'm betting that Biden wins. He wins the popular vote by an enormous amount. He wins the Electoral mm-hmm. College by a slim amount.
By a slim amount, and I think that's an accurate, you know, way to look at this. Now, the other thing though, even if you look at the Senate Democratic candidates in the last 24 hours. They're kind of afraid to say something about the indictment, the last one. You know, everybody's, you know, so touchy. So I think the best answer they can give, the Democratic side and Vivek Ramaswamy and everybody else, is there's a court process here.
Yeah. See,
there's
this
a
is
court
where...
process. I want to talk about education and jobs and manufacturing and
yeah.
China. There's a court process. They're not doing that. They're getting sucked into the abyss and the rabbit hole.
And this is where I think Biden has done a really good job of staying away from it. You know, CNN's running, you know, Chiron's going, oh, this is a tricky situation for the Biden administration.
No,
you know, why hasn't Joe Biden said anything? Because it's not his. He's got work to do. He's got jobs to create. He's got infrastructure to rebuild.
Well, and also you've got a special prosecutor. They can't even insinuate that he's calling up the AG and saying, go do something, you know, to Trump. They've got a special prosecutor, so it's hands off.
Yeah, it's remarkable to me. But you're right. The sad reality is, and this is what bothers me, and this is what's bothered me for a very long time, is our politics are no longer about what our government can get done. It's no longer how we're going to make people's lives better, how we're going to make society a better place. It's all about other stuff, and it's crazy for me. And for me, this most recent indictment, for me, is the most important one, because it's really about, you know, for me, it's about the peaceful transfer of power and everything that goes into that, what that meant and what that means to the country. I mean, maybe it's my eighth grade, you know, civics teacher put so much emphasis on this that, you know, I've taken it as, you know, something that is sacred. But for me, you know, the fact that you're going to not certify and you're going to try and do everything you can do to undo, you know, from John Adams forward, a bloodless, peaceful transition of power, for me is just unforgivable. And that's the issue. I don't care about, well, the personalities.
It is. And I want to make this kind of clear what I'm about to say. It doesn't matter if Trump is convicted in this last indictment. And when I say that, if he's convicted, yeah, that's one thing. But the reason I say it doesn't matter as the number one issue goes right back to what you said. Things are going to come out here because I've been down this path. They start going through your staff. They start going through your co-conspirators, you know, on and on and on. This is how the government, you know, does it in the prosecution avenue. I understand that. And things are going to come out here. And there's items we don't know about yet, and emails we don't know about yet, and conversations we don't know about yet. And some very, very ugly things could come forth about, you know, trying to stop the process that I think most Americans should or could or do respect. Yeah. Just exactly what you said. Nope. And I think that's going to be the worst part out of this, not whether in a year and a half from now, you know, Trump's convicted or not. That's a whole nother issue. But I think that the ugliness that that's going to come out of this, because people will start to talk when the government, you know, jumps in here, people talk. And I think it's going to be pretty hideous.
No, I mean, when Mark Meadows, who we haven't heard anything from in a very while, most people don't really know where he is. I think when that bird starts singing,
right,
I think he's going to paint a very vivid picture.
Exactly. And when the government looks at you and says, we're going to put you away for 30 years, you know, then it's like the canary in the coal mine, you know, it's going to sing.
Yeah, yeah. No, I, because, you know, like the Hoffa movie, the government doesn't run out of time or money.
Mm-hmm.
You're listening to the Rick Smith Show here with Bob Nay, former Ohio congressman, political analyst. I got to get your thoughts on you being in Ohio and all. Tuesday, the big special election. I thought special elections had been banned. When did we bring back August special elections?
Well, we brought it back because we, meaning Republicans, we didn't like what can potentially happen in November. So, look, I've been getting bombarded, as you can imagine, by people giving me messages and emails and phone calls. What do I do? Now, by the way, a lot of these are Republicans that, you know, have contacted me. And because, you know, I think right now that the issue's going down, it's going to be a no vote, I believe. But I tell people right out front, you're going to be told to your face that if you want to stop abortion, you've got to vote yes on issue one. Now, that may technically be true because the Republicans manipulated the entire system, said they wouldn't have special elections, they have a special election, then they're making it like the idiotic Senate cloture vote, which I think is just idiocy. But, you know, you've got to have 60% of the vote, which if you look at the history of what has passed in Ohio, a lot of absolute milestones would never have passed, you know, including rights to vote and voters, you know, rights and
right.
Civil rights wouldn't have passed. But so I tell people, yeah, the Republicans have managed to make this about one singular issue to stop it in any way possible, including, you know, manipulating the system. But I said, you know, put aside the issue that you're concerned about. Look at the overall general issue of what they're trying to do. They have violated their own norms in so many ways by doing this. Well, we're not going to have special elections, except for the one we're going to have to try to stop the November vote.
Yep.
And so if they get their lunch handed to them, it should give them a screaming lesson back to the Ohio legislature.
But don't you think that's, look, I'm not in Ohio anymore, but I know a lot of people there, and I think I still have something of a sense. But abortion is something that's not wildly unpopular. As I understand,
correct.
You know, it's like 55-45. I've seen some polls as high as 60-40 in favor of abortion being safe and legal and rare and all of that. And it would seem to me by tying this together with this, you know, trying to get to 60% on a constitutional amendment, that would go down just on its face, because if you're tying this to the abortion issue, which has more favorable ratings than not, aren't you hurting yourself?
Well, I would think so, but they are banking on the fact that it's a special election, and the ones that will turn out are going to be the anti-abortion people. That's what they're banking on.
Right.
I don't think that's what's going to happen, but that's what they're banking on. The other thing that they're going to see, they're going to kind of also lose because they really can't and don't come out and say, hey, by the way, this is completely about abortion. Some people have, but they really aren't genuine on it. You know, they're talking about it's too easy to change the Constitution. It's a walk in the park, you know, on and on and on.
Is it?
No, I mean,
you were in the state house for a number of years, right?
Right. Right.
How many times, 14, how many years 14. Were you in the state house?
14.
And how many times did you change the Constitution?
It's rare. Now, it's gotten to be more, but if you really look historically at it, it's not like California with the props, okay? I mean, California had a lot of props, you know that, and I know it. But it's not like, you know, every year you've got all these propositions, you know, that are coming forward to change the Constitution. This was strictly designed, and groups got some the legislature, the Republicans, to do this to stop one issue that they don't think they can beat in November at the ballot. This is what this is all about. And if the Republicans lose on this, it should literally send a very, I think, poignant message to them.
Now, this is one of those moments where, you know, because I had a friend who called me and asked me what I thought. And I said, I know you're a conservative. I know that you're probably going to vote for this. But think about if there's a change down the road that you actually want.
Right. There you go.
You know, the sword always cuts both ways.
There you go. Look at the current Senate. They have that. I've used idiotic once tonight. I'm going to use it again. They've got the idiotic one senator. I call it the peacock farm. I'm on a rant on the Senate tonight. You know, they can stop something, you know. And Mitch McConnell and Chuck Schumer are all worried about, you know, the senator doing what he's doing to the Pentagon right now. But you know what? They won't sit there and change that archaic rule, you know. And they make these rules to benefit themselves, but these rules come back to hurt them too. Just as McConnell and Schumer have utilized those rules, now they're coming back to haunt them. Same thing with this ballot issue. They can make it more difficult, and wait till they want to pass something that they want.
So do you think it's going to go down?
I think it's going to go down.
I hope so.
Now,
I hope it goes down big.
I'm watching these this polling coming out. It's neck and neck. I don't know.
I can't believe it's...
I don't believe that.
And the other part, help me here, because I was talking with David Pepper, former Democratic Party chair in Ohio, and he was telling me that there's also a part that they want to allow counties... I guess you have to have a certain percentage of votes in every county.
Every county.
Not just the 60% vote, but in every county you have to have a certain amount. So you could give one county, a very small county in the middle of nowhere, the ability to veto something that 90% of the state wants because they don't want it. You could really subvert the power, the will of the people by just having this little caveat, no?
Right. Now, here's what they're trying to sell to rural Ohio, though. They're twisting this. Here's what they're saying. Look, they don't need you, you know, Noble County, Belmont County, Jefferson County. They don't need you. They can just go get all of their signatures from Cleveland, Columbus, and Cincinnati. That's what they're trying to tell people, right?
Right.
And to get them on board. But when you look at it, you could just, one county could be picked out that's maybe not a rural county. It's a medium-sized county, and it could be the sabotage for a ballot issue you want, you know, where people, they don't have an organized effort to be able to get the signatures in that county, or they do it on purpose to not get the signatures. So the whole thing is just flawed beyond belief. But the guts of the legislature to say, we're not going to have a special election, except the one we want.
Yeah. Well, it's going to be interesting to see how this plays out, but I wanted to get your thoughts on it because you generally have an idea of what's going on in your neck
of
the woods.
I'm predicting issue one, and I'm hoping, but I'm not just hoping to see what I'm saying is I think it's going to go down.
Yeah, well, I hope people show up. Again, it's all about who shows up.
All in the turnout.
But as always, Bob, appreciate the time. Thanks so much.
Thank you, Rick.
I'm going to take a quick break. Right back to wrap things up. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk. We'll be right back. I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in 2. On this day in labor history, the year was 1997. That was the day 185,000 UPS workers and members of the International Brotherhood of Teamsters went out on strike. It was the biggest strike in the United States in more than a decade. At issue was the use of part-time workers. The union estimated that as many as 2 out of 3 employees at Big Brown were part-time. The package delivery giant had also cut part-time wages to $8 an hour. These workers also were not eligible for the same benefits as full-time employees. At the time, UPS handled nearly 80% of the packages delivered in the United States each day. The strike ground those deliveries to a halt. The strike lasted for 16 days and cost the company $650 million in business. The Teamsters paid out $10 million from its strike fund to support those on the picket line. The work stoppage succeeded in improving wages and securing workers' pensions. UPS also agreed to move 5,000 part-time employees to full-time over the life of the signed 5-year contract. Teamster President Ron Kerry declared, "People will be celebrating our victories over corporate greed. This fight with UPS shows what working people can accomplish when they all stick together." The UPS workers stood up to the throwaway worker approach, and the nation's working people stood behind them. Today, many companies rely on this throwaway worker approach as their business model. They keep workers at a part-time status to avoid paying health care benefits and a living wage. Does today's labor movement have the solidarity with these workers to make a demand for full-time work? Labor History in 2 brought to you by the Illinois Labor History Society and The Rick Smith Show. For more information, go to laborhistoryin2.com, like us on Facebook, and follow us on the Twitters at Labor History in 2. If you're listening, Tuesday, you got to get out and vote. It's amazing to me that what the Republicans keep trying to get away with. And that little caveat of it's got to be every county. You got to have a certain percentage of votes from every county. That took a little doing. Wow. Florida. Let's talk about another crazy state. Evidently, Florida has effectively banned a second AP course, this time psychology, is being banned in Florida, the AP class, because evidently the psychology class talks about sexuality and gender and orientation. And that, you know, can't talk about that stuff in Florida, because, of course, there's nothing going on in Florida. And finally, everyone's wild and crazy on the right about Sound of Freedom, the movie. And look, you know, the story is an interesting story. I mean, the scourge of child trafficking, the scourge of abusing children, something that most certainly does need to be exposed, needs to be dealt with. People need to be jailed. I would argue much worse penalties, but that's that of a father. If it was my kid, I understand capital punishment, just not by the state. That said, we are in this world now of ideological consumerism, where, you know, now this movie, the rights, this is their movie. And, you know, because, you know, it's a huge grossing movie, and you know, nobody wants you to see it, and they're blocking it. If you remember, this was crowdsourced, so a bunch of money was brought by ideological people who said, no, we want this kind of movie, and that's fine. It's fine. Well, the story today that came out, evidently a guy who was a funder of this program. Now, understand, there were a couple of thousand people who funded this. But it just turns out that a guy named Fabian Marta, he was one of the people who gave money to fund this film, because, you know, it's important to expose child trafficking. Evidently, he's been charged with felony child kidnapping. Now, I'm not saying that everyone who gave money to this are guilty of child kidnapping. It just seems interesting that this guy would fund that. It seems ironic. And it's one of those things that, you know, I always remembered my mother saying, when someone's accusing you of doing something, chances are they're doing it. They're probably the one doing it. This kind of plays into that frame.
You're listening to The Shaw.
WAUK 540 AM Jackson. W266 DR Waukesha.
And always streaming on the Civic Media app.